What up, guys? Unapologetic Live. I'm your host, Amla Benobi. Taylor's in the producer's bay.
Happy Monday.
Boom, 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 boom. Welcome, guys. And before we get into today's topics, which are Keke Palmer and colorism. This is trending on Twitter now. We're going to talk about colorism. Have I experienced myself being a half-black
female
in America?
That was a new word for me today, by the way.
Colorism. You haven't heard it. It's basically like racism, but if you look up the Google definition, it's really whack, which we're going to get to, and we're going to talk about that. So we're going to talk Keke Palmer. We're talking about whether or not four-year-olds can choose their gender. Yep, this is a discussion we're going to be having. Plus, some new studies that have come out of Finland and Sweden that completely debunk a lot of the gender ideology that we are experiencing right now in the United States. Plus, is a new army school getting real woke, ushering in diversity, equity, and inclusion. We all know those are very beautiful words on their face. You know, I'm pro diversity. I'm pro inclusion, not equity. And you guys know why. But we'll talk about their DEI trainings, what that looks like for the military, and why our military might be wavering. Why are we having a few little bits of trouble getting recruits to our military? We'll discuss that in today's show. But before we get there, please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we post a new video for you and every time we go live, which is 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. And if you want to listen to the podcast, go to Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review because the people who hate us leave us 1-star reviews. And you know, we don't like that. We don't need it. Okay. Let's talk Keke Palmer. So last Friday we did a show and I said, I went and watched Jordan Peele's Nope. We talked about whether or not it was woke. I gave it a pretty good review, 7.5. Told you all that you should go see it, unless you don't want to support Jordan Peele, which some of you mentioned. Totally respect it. Understand it. Okay. Keke Palmer has come out and on Twitter made a viral tweet talking about the idea of colorism. Why did this happen? Because through this opening weekend of the film, Keke Palmer has been getting compared to Zendaya. For those of you who don't know who Zendaya is, she's also a really popular young black actress, singer, dancer. She's a superstar. So Keke Palmer has been getting a lot of comparison to Zendaya, and probably because they're both black and they have similar personalities and the way that they talk to press, the way that they exude such confidence. These are all good things, not necessarily, but you know, having a similar personality and being super confident and just standing in your own is a really great thing. And I have a feeling that's why Keke Palmer is being compared to Zendaya. But Keke Palmer didn't like it. And here's the tweet that she put out. She said, a great example of colorism is to believe I can be compared to anyone. I'm the youngest talk show host ever, the first black woman to star in her own show on Nickelodeon, and the youngest and first black Cinderella on Broadway. I'm an incomparable talent. Baby, this is Keke Palmer. She goes on to list a couple more of her accolades in another tweet and talks about how blessed she is to have the career that she has. But I want to talk about the colorism accusation. Okay, so she's gotten a lot of comparisons to Zendaya. Makes sense, really. If you know the two actresses, they do have a similar temperament. They hold to their own. They're super confident. They don't really care what other people think. And that's how they express themselves. So on that alone, I think that's why she's getting a comparison to Zendaya. But let's talk about the color aspect of it. They do both happen to be black actresses. And that can be seen as colorism, looking at somebody's skin color and making a judgment about them based on that. And I'm no stranger to this colorism thing. I get compared to Candace Owens every single day. I can't tell you how many people walk up to me and say, oh my gosh, you're like the next Candace Owens. Oh my gosh, you're like a young Candace Owens. And if you guys watch my content and you watch Candace Owens, you probably know the only thing we really share is our skin color and some basic conservative values. Other than that, we don't share the same temperament. We don't have the same personality. We don't have the same characteristics. But because we are both black females in a space of the conservative movement, we get compared to each other a lot. And am I okay with that? Yeah, I'm okay. And you know why I'm okay with that? Because humans are simple beings. We see patterns, we recognize them, we see what falls into those patterns, and then we make comparisons. Yes, I am a black female. Yes, I do podcasting. Yes, I am conservative. Are those three things that Candace Owens also does? Yeah. So it's cool. It's fine. But Keke Palmer hops on and says, you know, this is a great example of colorism in my career, and I'm incomparable. How dare you compare me to somebody? How dare they compare you to somebody who's doing a similar career to you? How dare they compare you to somebody who's just as talented as you are? How dare they compare you to somebody who also happens to be a black female? I mean, I get it. It's reductive. And I recognize that when people compare me to Candace Owens. But is it something that we really need to cry racism and colorism over? Probably not. And for somebody who's saying this is colorism, it's really interesting that if you look through her tweets, she makes a distinct effort to mention her color quite a few times. The first black woman to star in her own Nickelodeon show, the first black Cinderella on Broadway, if your color isn't important and it's not something that you want attention drawn to when being compared to other actresses, why'd you feel the need to mention it so much? Why do you feel the need to express yourself as the first black woman to do anything? If you want people to remove race from the conversation and stop doing that, why is that not something that you can do yourself? And that's what we talk about a lot on this show. So many people want to look at you and say, your race defines who you are. Your race means this. Your race puts you in this box. Your race means that you have inherent bias, or you are inherently oppressive, or that you don't have bias and that you're oppressed. But it really doesn't mean anything. So for someone in one line to complain about colorism and then go and define her race and use that as a pivotal characteristic when it pertains to her career, we're dealing with some issues here, aren't we? We're dealing with some cognitive dissonance. And I took the time to actually go and look up the definition of colorism, because I'm seeing people talk about this a lot. And the definition is really interesting. Let's look. Colorism: prejudice or discrimination against individuals with a dark skin tone. Notice how it only goes in the direction of dark. It doesn't go in the direction of light. So you can't be colorist towards somebody who's white like Taylor. It only goes in the other direction of somebody with a darker skin tone. Taylor, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you're making me think too. I mean, obviously there's the point that it is like you said, a lazy comparison to just say, oh, you share these immutable characteristics with this person. You guys must have more in common or somehow be more affiliated. And my mind immediately went to, like, in the NFL, it's very common for, like, there's certain stereotypes around white wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And so there's like a little template for, like, they're usually like short, quick, very like have surprising athleticism is what they'll say when in reference to like white wide receivers, and they always compare them. It's like, oh, Adam Thielen had a great day today. Reminds me of Wes Welker. It's like two white wide receivers. And ditto goes the opposite way for black quarterbacks. And it's like, oh, well, it's a black quarterback. He must be very athletic and mobile, as opposed to like someone who sits in the pocket and reads the defense and is a bit more cerebral. And, you know, in both directions, it's just a lazy way to think about people generally.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
that's all it is.
Yeah. And if you want to be, but I like what you're saying too about Kiki, is that if you want to be judged on the merits of your performance and not on your race, then why do you need to attach the label of race to all these other accomplishments that you have? You can't have it both ways.
Right.
You can't want an extra celebration for being black and the first black person to do XYZ, and then criticize people for comparing you to another black person.
Right. You know, and it's so often a mishap that we have in these conversations. So many people on the left tell me, well, you know, my race shouldn't matter that much, or it's mattered too much, and I've been discriminated against and all these things. And they say, you know, why don't we just get rid of it or whatever? And then they go, well, no, we need to talk about race. We need to have the discussion. You need to ask me questions. But then when white people ask them questions about their race, that's a microaggression. So many people have come up to me and said, you know, can I touch your hair? Your hair's really interesting, or I've never seen braids like that. Or when I have my huge fro, people are interested in seeing my hair. It's something they've never seen before. And they ask questions about it. They're curious about it. But that's a microaggression now, because you've pointed out something that is distinct to someone of my race. And now that's a form of racism, we're saying. So what is it? And we can't have it both ways, because both ways don't work. Both ways cause fights. Both ways are going to create conversations and arguments that really should not be had. So I would love some clarification on this tweet, Kiki Palmer. I know she doesn't watch the show. Mm-hmm. ever. But these two things really cannot exist logically in the same realm. So this is a discussion that people have been having on Twitter. Look, this has 100,000 retweets, 760,000 likes. So it shows you how commonplace these ideas are, which are just dissonant to one another. You can see this very tweet. She mentions colorism and then mentions her blackness. So which one is it? Just curious. Just let me know. Or is it, you know, it's free range and you can do whatever you want as a black person, but other people can't do that, because that seems to be the case. And when you look at the definition of colorism, the one that I pulled up, it seems like it only applies to people of color. It doesn't apply in the other direction. So are we just going to say that one side of our society can have these rights and privileges and all these benefits and the other one can't? Let me know.
Real quick, we got a super chat from JJ. It says, does colorism exist anywhere other than the black community? When Zendaya is winning, she's black. When they need oppression points, she's biracial.
There you go. I mean, these are all good questions. I think we utilize race as it benefits us. And that seems to be pretty clear in everything that's happening right now. It's like we live in an oppression Olympics at this point. And I'm over it. I don't think it needs to happen any more. And yeah, you're right. People do use their race when it's beneficial to them. And we'll see if that changes. Hopefully, people will start to recognize how this doesn't work and is illogical, and we will move on from it. It's just a healthier society all around to not have such a focus on this. You're not going to hear me say, well, I'm the first black conservative commentator of PragerU. No, because I don't care about it. It doesn't mean anything. Now, let's move on to the story again in the chat. Put your thoughts on this particular tweet. Do you think Kiki is saying something profound here? Do you think this is a discussion that needs to be had? Or do you want to comment that I'm the next Candace Owens? Because you can also comment that, and I'm fine with it. And, you know, it's an honorable comparison. It's an honor. Sure, I'll take it. Next, here's this headline out of metro.co.uk. I want to laugh, but it's not funny. You guys know that TikTok sound where it's like, funny, but not funny, haha. Funny, weird. That's this right here. Here's the headline. My four-year-old is gender nonconforming, but her nursery doesn't respect that. Oh, so much to unpack here. I urge you guys to go and read this article. It is a mother talking about her child who is a female who has expressed on several occasions, mommy, I'm a boy. I think I'm a boy. I'm a boy. And apparently this girl went to school and the teacher was like, girl, you're not a boy. You are a girl. Now I can see where there might be some confusion here with some of the things that you might be hearing or feeling. And that's totally fine because there are girls who identify more with their masculine side. There are girls that identify more with their feminine side. There are men, you know, vice versa for them as well. And as interesting as this story is, and as so often people will come and say, well, why not just let the four-year-old girl be whatever she wants to be? So many people will tell you children know who they are. And there is some truth to that. I don't want to invalidate what anybody feels in their mind, their heart, their soul, okay? If you feel like a masculine individual, who am I to tell you you don't feel like a masculine individual? My qualm is with the treatment. My qualm is what happens after that expression occurs. And time and time again, this has been proven as the wrong route, the route we're taking right now, the route that the Secretary of Health is telling people we should take, which is blind gender affirmation and medical transitioning for even minors. We're talking people below the age of 18, allowing them to undergo what is a treatment that has very little studying to it, very little studying, puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and eventually sex reassignment surgery, which renders children, minors who go through this process, infertile. Infertile. You will never have children the way that your body was meant to have children, the way that your body was born. That will never happen for you. And right now, we have a group of experts standing up for that form of treatment and saying this is the best way to go. But here we go. We have new news, and it's news that we are utterly, utterly ignoring in mainstream media, in legacy media, in Hollywood, in public education. And I want to read this to you. There is a brilliant article that you guys can go and check out on Substack. And it's called What Happened in Finland in Sweden. We did a whole episode on gender affirmation care, what's happening with minors right now in the United States, and whether or not children should be able to choose their gender. And if you go and take even a moment to look into some of the research that has been done internationally on this topic, you will find your answer. And we're going to go through some of that today. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, this is offensive. Let people be who they... I'm not meaning to offend anybody. You know, it's only offensive if you think it's offensive. I'm just going to tell you what has been found and what these studies have shown. I've taken some excerpts from this article, although I do encourage you to go and read all of it. I've just taken out what I feel like is pivotal for you guys to know. Here's a quote. The first line intervention for gender variance during childhood and adolescent years is psychosocial support and, as necessary, gender explorative therapy and treatment for comorbid psychiatric disorders. Quote, in light of available evidence, gender reassignment of minors is an experimental practice. Isn't that really interesting to hear? This is an experimental practice. When you can turn on CNN and MSNBC and ABC and even sometimes Fox News, and you will hear from so-called experts telling you that gender affirmation care, specifically in the form of medical transition, is the way to go with minors. Rachel Levine, our Secretary of Health, just said so. Now, let's get into the motivation here. We know this is experimental. I think the longest study that's been done on transgender care as it pertains to medical transitioning is about 30 years, and that's out of Sweden, not even out of the US. And there has only been one nonpartisan study of gender affirmation care done in the United States. Can you believe that? I can believe it because even our health has been politicized in today's day and age. I don't care about the politics of the matter. I care about the truth of the matter. I care about who is being harmed. And right here, gender reassignment of minors is an experimental practice. This has been done short term. We don't know the long-term ramifications of this. We are hearing from detransitioners to the tune of about 10% who are saying, hey, my body's altered for the rest of my life and there's nothing I can do about it. All I can do is live with regret. That's all that I can do. Yet you turn on the TV and you see people blindly following this stuff and telling you to engage with a child who thinks they are a different gender. And I want to posit the question because I think questions are important. What sort of incentive does a person like Rachel Levine, our U.S. Secretary of Health, who happens to be transgender herself, what sort of incentive does an individual like that have to convince you that this is the right route? If I have made a life-altering decision, a body-altering decision, and one that is completely irreversible to myself, isn't it in my best interest to convince myself that that's the right thing to do? Isn't it also in my best interest to get another pool of people to do exactly that? So that I can feel as though I am part of a community and I can feel affirmed in the decision that I have already made. This is not something that they're exploring. It's a decision that's already been made by Rachel Levine. So of course, when asked, should minors be able to engage in this? Absolutely. Look, I did it and I'm here standing as the US Secretary of Health. Never mind the research that we've seen that is completely dissident to what I'm saying right now. Never mind the work of a psychologist like Ken Zucker, who found that 70% of minors who identified with gender dysphoria have regretted it, and it was fatal for them. This is tried, true, studied by a doctor who has actually allowed some minors to medically transition. And that's what we're going to find in this study and in this article, again, that I encourage you to read in its entirety. Here's a graph here. Take a look at this graph and tell me what you see. This is the amount of people who are identifying as gender dysphoric, and it's broken up by gender. All of a sudden, in about 2014, 2015, we see a major spike in gender dysphoric individuals. But who are those individuals? Are they men and boys? No, it's girls. Look at how quickly women are identifying as gender dysphoric. And when they go and see these doctors and they express this gender dysphoria, come to find out they have a lot of influence from social media. They have a lot of influence from the things that they're watching on TV. They have a lot of influence from the conversations that have now been ushered into our public institutions and schools about gender nonconformity. So all of a sudden you see this spike in girls identifying. And not only that, the girls who are coming in to see these clinicians are suffering from multiple other psychiatric comorbidities on top of the gender dysphoria. We're talking chronic anxiety, manic depressive disorder. All of these things are also showing up in these young women. We've seen studies talk about the influence of social media and how that leads to psychiatric comorbidities. Why is it that when it comes to gender care, this cannot be mentioned? In fact, at a medical conference, over 100 doctors were uninvited and unable to table at the medical conference because they had a dissident opinion to blind affirmation gender care. Question, why is this happening? I'm not even trying to posit my beliefs into this. Tell me why it's happening. Why do we feel the need to censor these people? Why is it girls more so than boys presenting with this stuff? Why is it also girls who have been shown gender dysphoria and been told that this is a way to join a new community. This is a way to find acceptance. And this is a way to be more comfortable in your body. Why are these things happening? And if somebody who's an expert in transgender care on the left wants to come on this show and tell me why it's happening and why it's happening in this manner, you are more than welcome to come and sit at the table with me and have this discussion because I would like to know. So Finland and Sweden also wanted to know the same thing. Let's read more. Quote, scientific evidence for any interventions on minors with gender identity indication is actually zero is what they were told. That is, there are some studies that show improvement from interventions, but they are so low quality, so low certainty, that they shouldn't be extrapolated from. Why is that? Is it because people are entering these studies with a particular political bias? Probably. Why is it that we don't have any nonpartisan studies in the US on this subject matter except for one? Because people are injecting their bias into studies before they're even done, and with the money that they give to them, already buying out a result for what they're going to hear. And this is a shame. And the people who are doing this and engaging this should be ashamed of themselves. Because there's a good chance that this might be the right medical treatment. But with your bias being injected to it, you're never going to find out. You are never going to know. And in the interim, you're going to have a bunch of kids who are undergoing this treatment that is irreversible and experimental. And they are going to be left with so many psychiatric problems when this is over and done and when they grow up. And we always talk about the suicidal ideation rate of these individuals. We've talked about it several occasions on this show. And these studies have also found that the suicide rate does not change with gender affirmation care. Another question, why? Why? If this is the right thing to do, if this is what gains you acceptance, if this is what makes people feel better psychologically and physically, why is the suicide rate the same after receiving this care? And this is not to get on here and denounce the existence of transgender individuals. Of course not. You know the phrase, I think, therefore I am. In a lot of ways, that is very true. And if I met a girl who says, you know, I think I'm a guy, and I'm very masculine, and I want to be a boy, I want to be seen as a boy, I want to present as a boy, and she grows up as an adult, and she makes that decision for herself, that's the decision that she's made. Who am I to tell you? You know that is not what you are if that is what you feel in your heart and soul. I can't do that for you. But I can tell you about what the outcomes look like. I can tell you about the other psychiatric comorbidities that are often coupled with this problem. I can tell you that there are a lot of people who will tell you you're making the right decision because they're getting money, they're getting fame, they're getting acceptance, and they're getting affirmed themselves. And they don't care about you. They're just blindly throwing you to the wolves on this particular subject. And I can tell you there are other countries who are actually doing the research, and they're doing it from an unbiased standpoint, and they're finding the real results. And that's what Sweden and Finland are doing. Wish that would happen in the US, right? Can we do anything without political bias anymore? No, we can't. Let's keep reading. Both guidelines suggest therapy as a first-line treatment for gender dysphoria. Quote, we continue to lack really reliable scientific evidence concerning the efficacy and safety, end quote. Another quote, we have to have better knowledge. There is really no way to properly assess risk without more and better evidence, end quote. Thus, the focus of guidelines shifted to follow-up, caution, and patient safety, with an emphasis on thorough assessment, quote, to minimize the risk of giving the wrong treatment. Isn't that something we should all be concerned about? Like, it's so wild to me that in the comments of this video or on my Instagram, I'm going to get a mountain of DMs calling me a transphobe. I'm going to get death threats of people telling me I don't want trans people to exist or I don't care about trans lives. Excuse me, aren't you the one denying the rates of suicide because of this treatment? Aren't you the one denying the irreversible care? Aren't you the one denying the fact that these surgeries are experimental and come with many, many faults? We're talking transgender individuals who go and get these surgeries and have bacterial infections for the rest of their lives, have follow-up surgeries for the rest of their lives, have a body that they are unhappy with. I won't even get into some of the graphic problems with these experimental surgeries that are not tried and true yet. But I'm the one who doesn't care about trans people. I'm the one who's advocating that we find a treatment that works, that has good outcomes, and I don't care if at the end of it they go, yeah, I am a girl who identifies as a boy. Okay, cool. Dope. I'm glad you're not dying. I'm glad you're not sick. I'm glad you didn't mutilate yourself because somebody told you that was the best treatment to have. And I'm glad you haven't done something that you regret. That's where I want to land in this discussion. I don't want to land in the, oh, well, I just blindly affirm them. And now, look, they're depressed. They have all these other psychiatric problems. And here's where we are. But I don't care about trans lives. Right. Right. And that's the way the narrative, that's the way the cookie crumbles. You know, you say something that's dissident to what everybody has already decided that they believe. And then you get called a transphobe. And they'll tell you there's a million studies. And if you look into who funded the studies, it's people who already believe, they've already decided what the outcome of the study is. I'll read you this one part of this article before we move on to something else, which is just unbelievable to me. Let me find it. Gosh, trans. It's right at the top of this article. Okay, here we go. Yeah, so these things are practiced and studied in Finland and Sweden. Here's the top of this paragraph here. These guidelines were in contrast to those proffered by the World Professional Association of Transgender Health. I wonder why the World Professional Association of Transgender Health might have disagreed with what was said by Sweden and Finland's unbiased doctors. I wonder what amount of bias might be injected into the studies that WPATH is doing when compared to Sweden and Finland. And the issue is that it makes so many people feel good to go, yep, you are who you think you are. You know who you are. That woman on Fox News said her one-year-old knew his gender, or her gender. I don't even remember at this point. Her one-year-old was expressing gender dysphoria. At that point, by all means, you could have a gender dysphoric child, but your one-year-old did not tell you that. I'm sorry. Your one-year-old did not tell you that. And it speaks to not only the extreme form of virtue signaling that this actually is, but that people are seeking points for doing this stuff. It really makes them feel good. And it shouldn't make you feel good at the end of the day. And I know that sounds bad because you feel like you're being compassionate. You feel like you're doing the right thing. But lying is not compassionate. Ignoring evidence is not compassionate. And throwing your child to the wolves when it comes to this stuff. A one-year-old child, can you imagine? Can you imagine if I had a one-year-old child and I said my baby who can't even talk yet is not a girl, she's actually a boy, and I started putting that child through treatment when they were old enough to start getting it, which now in the United States is, I think, 8-year-olds are able to get involved in this treatment and start doing puberty blockers. Can you imagine? What does that sound like? Does that sound like child abuse to you? Because certainly a one-year-old cannot tell you what their gender is, and you have now done something that will render them sterile. And to lie about that, even though it makes you feel good, is a horrible thing to do. I don't understand why we can't be honest. I don't understand.
Yeah, as you're saying, the willingness to overlook actual harm in order to spare someone from imaginary harm, or to make yourself feel good about the idea mm-hmm. of sparing someone from imaginary harm, is insane to me. And the fact that we've seen over and over again, whether it's male prisoners who identify as a female prisoner to be transferred and then they end up impregnating multiple women,
right.
The day spa situation, the situation of the young man who raped a girl in their school,
yep.
We're leaving up not just the individual themselves who is struggling with gender dysphoria, but often these situations where we overlook all of these harms and all of this damage that's associated with just denying the facts and not looking at evidence for evidence sake. And it's maddening.
Yeah. And it's not coming to you with any sort of inherent bias. Yeah. I don't hate people who identify as a different gender. And especially if that was treatment that they were going to get, that was going to save their lives
right.
and actually truly make a difference in their lives, by all means, do what you need to do to save your own life and to make yourself sound mentally, physically, spiritually, whatever you want to say. Do whatever you need to do that. But to lie to somebody and tell them that this is the way to do it, and to lead them down a path of harm, lead them down a path of mental illness and suicide, is disgusting. And that's what's happening right now. That is what's happening. And to everybody, no matter what you believe, when you're thinking about your ideology or a specific issue, go down in the depth of your brain and go, okay, who is the silent victim here? Who are we not hearing from, right? But who is also being directly affected? Who's also being directly affected? And I can give you an example where we can call out our own side on this. Let's talk about immigration, okay? So we're saying we need stricter immigration. We're saying we need to get down to the brass tacks on that. We need to shut off. We need to create the wall. We need to document everybody, okay? These are all good things. Yeah, I think we should know exactly who's coming in and out of our country. Okay, who is the silent victim of cracking down on immigration? Well, I can think of maybe young women who are in really bad situations in these countries and need to get out and need to seek asylum, and they might be denied through our court system. That's a silent victim. I can think of young men who are trying to get out of this gang environment that they're in with things like MS-13 that are happening in Mexico, and they go to seek asylum, and because we have too many people, they get denied. Those are silent victims, okay? Even from a conservative standpoint. Mm-hmm. But the victim list for leftist ideology is running, and it continues, and they just continue to be ignored. Children can't advocate for themselves, especially children with parents who are trying to virtue signal by telling them they're a different gender than they were born with. And those children who will never know anything different. Like, I think of Jazz Jennings. You guys remember that show, I Am Jazz? Jazz Jennings, from, I think, her mom said as young as 2 years old, was a boy who identified as a girl. And Jazz Jennings went through puberty blocking, went through the cross-sex hormones, went through surgical gender affirmation, a child. And now look at Jazz Jennings. a mountain of mental health issues, clearly not sound in herself, not healthy, has written explicitly about how she can't experience sex anymore, how her private parts are completely messed up and completely unnatural because of what she's gone through. And that was a kid who never had a chance. So there's no criticism to give to Jazz Jennings. How can you criticize somebody whose parent made up their gender at 2 years old? These are silent victims. Kids cannot advocate for themselves. And to read this article, my four-year-old is gender nonconforming, but her nursery doesn't respect it, that's a shame on the parents. And unfortunately, because we do have, you know, people will say there's nobody who hates trans people. There are people who hate trans people. There are people who are anti-transgender individuals. That four-year-old is going to grow up to experience all of that. That four-year-old is going to bear the brunt of what her mother and father created for her. Because of them. So we can blame the people who are anti all of this stuff, or we can blame the parents who are ignoring evidence. And that's my rant. I don't even know where else to go with it. But this, it's a trend now. It very much is a trend. I want to show you guys this TikTok of somebody who has gone so far with this stuff that she's decided to tattoo her pronouns on her hands. Here's the video.
Yes, I would love to. Let me show y'all them and talk a little bit about them and why I got them. So these are my finger tattoos. I've got him on this side, which is my left hand. I got my heat on this side, my right hand, and I got a little tooth also when I got my finger tattoos done. So I got them done in September of 2019, right after my top surgery actually, but I'd been planning on getting them for a while. And one of the big reasons I got my pronouns on my hands was because I worked in food service and I would get misgendered a lot. And so when I worked at like the register, people would hand me their cards and hand me their money and they would have to see my fingers and they were very obvious. So I thought it would help me not get misgendered as much. I also love them, they make me feel very cool. But yeah, that's the big reason I got them, was because I wanted them, instead of like pronoun pins, they were on me every day and people could always see them.
Pause. So much to unpack there. You know what it reminds me of? Myself. You know what I have tattooed? A black power fist. You know why I got that tattooed? Because I thought this is permanent. There's no way I think anything different because of this. And so many people are cheering me on. So many people think this is cool, which is exactly the word. That this girl used. Cool. It makes me feel cool. Who doesn't want to do something that makes them feel cool? Who doesn't want to do something that gets them cheered on by other people? Who wouldn't want to tattoo something that they think is going to be utterly permanent? Because they haven't heard anything different. They've always been told that this is going to be permanent. They haven't heard the studies that say that you grow out of this. They haven't heard the studies that say that this is phasal. They haven't heard the studies that say that this is harmful. So why not get a tattoo of it? I did it too. I can't cast judgment, really. I can't say that this is stupid. I can't say this is ridiculous. And I don't think it's stupid or ridiculous. I think that these people are victim of circumstance. Same way that I was. And what did I do? I got it tattooed. It's a good thing I wasn't growing up in the age of gender affirmation, because I was a tomboy as a young girl. And guess where I would be? I'd be going like this and showing you he, him tattoos. So who am I to cast judgment and say that this is stupid or ridiculous? It's not. It's just tragic. It's all it is. It's just tragic. And here we have another video. Here's a teacher who has, you know, a pride classroom. And what does the classroom turn into? It turns into a nightclub. This teacher also engages in drag outside of school, which we will talk about and have a really normal discussion about.
I'm not getting audio on this.
There's no audio here.
Oh.
No audio. Welcome to my high school classroom nightclub with a pride flag.
Say hello, and I don't look like I'm my own friends. You guys, you don't know me.
Oh, it's so cool. It turns into a nightclub with the flashy lights and the rainbows and the music. And on base level, you know, you see this video and you go, well, that's fine, right? There's nothing inherently wrong about that. And you'd be right. There's nothing inherently wrong about, you know, a little rainbow flag and a classroom that turns into a nightclub. I'm assuming that's not the language that we use with the children. If they did, that'd be concerning. But there is when you dive into it. And there's nothing inherently wrong with the fact that this teacher does drag outside of school. Who am I to judge a teacher that does that? Also, who am I to know that a teacher does that? We don't know what our teachers do outside in their private lives. And I'm sure a lot of teachers, both conservative and leftist, do a lot of crazy things in their personal lives when they are outside of work. I can't tell you what to do or what not to do outside of work. But when that ideology gets injected into your children's lives, the children that you are teaching, there is a problem. because you know what's coupled with that. You know the pairing that's going to come with this. And you certainly know that this is not a discussion that we should be having with young individuals. Now, I just don't know what else to say. And you have platforms like Reddit and Twitter who are saying, you know, we're going to ban the word groomer. We're not going to let anybody use the word groomer anymore. What is this, if not that? What is this, if not that? Obviously, this is a lighter example, but the teachers who are putting up these pride flags and talking about sexuality and doing drag queen story hours for their kids and saying girls can be boys and boys can be girls, what is that? Is that not an adult taking advantage of a child and leading them down a path of a certain identity? And is that not the very definition of grooming? And you can do grooming from a sexual level, you can do grooming on an ideological level, and you can do grooming on a political level. I think it's because people attach the word to pedophilia, okay? And that's what makes people not want to hear it. But I could groom you into being an alt-right Nazi, okay? The word is applicable in so many different cases. And if it's not applicable here, it's not applicable anywhere, because this is exactly that. It's exactly that. Sorry. Guys, that's what it is.
They're not groomers, Amo. They're people who groom.
Groomer is a gender term. Let's read some comments here. I want to see what you guys are saying. Nightclub classrooms, that screams grooming on so many levels. I mean, you know, in you know, we saw when the drag queen story times were happening, people were saying, well, what's wrong? It's just a man dressing up with a woman. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing inherently wrong. It's not sexual. They're not doing anything. Yeah, it is. There is something wrong. We as adults know. You know what drag is for. You go to Las Vegas, you see a drag show, and I'm sure conservatives do it as well. It's an entertaining thing for some people to go and see. But where are those held? Bars? Nightclubs? What time of the day? Are you going to a daytime drag show? Typically not. They're typically done at night. And what do drag queens normally wear? Really big fake boobs. They dress up as women. They wear very sexual outfits. Some of them dress like strippers. We know that this is adult content. We know it's meant to be watched by adults. Little kids aren't supposed to be watching RuPaul's Drag Race. But here we are. And because we live in a clown world where up is down and down is up and black is white and right is wrong, you are supposed to accept that this is something for children. You don't have to accept that. I can't tell you how much in the future I'm going to be grilling every single teacher of my child if they to a public school or a private school. I don't care. I will grill them. And I will not care. Not care at all.
I saw on Twitter the other day, I think it was a pastor or someone I follow said that churches should have a gender statement that that pastors must like sign and endorse before, you know, you just so you can put your cards on the table. But I think they should extend that in like a private school. If you have a private school, you should be able to say, okay, we are not a school that teaches gender ideology. Yeah. If you're going to teach here, then you should not apply.
It's a step we shouldn't have to take, but look at us.
I know.
Oh my gosh. And it's infiltrated everything. For our last story of the day, we're going to be talking about the woke Army College. Let me zoom in on this for you guys so you can see it, and we can talk about this. So the U.S. Army War College's newest acronym is DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And they're going to be bringing in all these parameters and things that have been written by different lieutenant colonels and colonels in the Army that are a means to address bias. This says, quote, interrupting bias in Army talent management. Another quote, highlighting diversity, equity, and inclusion, end quote. The authors accuse the current Army of systemic bias and claim that such bias impairs Army's ability to harness cognitive diversity. We all know it's not cognitive diversity. Again, what a beautiful term, because it sounds like they're going to be accepting of people of all different backgrounds, of all different ways of life, of all different political beliefs, but it's not cognitive diversity. It's racial diversity. It's gender-based diversity. It's sexuality diversity, which means absolutely nothing. Let's keep reading. It is necessary, they write, to modernize personnel management so that current, quote, systems of inequality, end quote, don't, quote, impede, end quote, DEI. The goal of Army personnel management should be, quote, to create a more inclusive Army culture, end quote. Holton Davis recommend using, quote, big data, end quote, and, quote, artificial intelligence, end quote, for purposes of selection of leaders, assignments, and promotion within the military. I'll tell you what, you don't need big data or artificial intelligence to do any of these things. You need a pea brain to do these things, to look at somebody and go, oh, you're black, in, Asian, nah, not good enough. Hispanic in there, white, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. Get out of here. You don't need artificial intelligence to do that. But I digress. Let's keep reading here. The Army's talent management, the author's right, need to support, quote, a variety of household structures differing from the traditional nuclear family, end quote. And by that pretty little statement that we just made, we mean that we're going to ask people what their sexuality is before they enter the Army, and we're going to choose people that are not heterosexual. That's all that means. I love the twisting of language. A variety of household structures differing from the traditional nuclear family. All they're saying is we want more gay, bi, lesbian people. That's it. Because that matters so much more than what you can achieve. It matters so much more than how you deal with combat. It matters so much more than whether or not you can protect your fellow man. It matters so much more than the allegiance you have to your country. These are the things that they're looking for. The Army, like our country, suffers from racial injustice, income inequality, and political polarization, which are, quote, potential barriers to achieving cognitive diversity. That's a new one for me, cognitive diversity. You heard that one yet?
That's new for me too, yeah.
It's new. We're getting all these new leftist words, guys. Cognitive diversity.
Which is carefully, doesn't say diversity of thought or opinion, but no. Cognitive diversity.
Yeah, which is just unbelievable. They're trying to help reduce unconscious bias towards gender, race, or body type on the day of the selection board. Dude, you know what? I just wish they would come out and say what they're actually saying here. And this is the thing, because when you translate these words, so much of why these ideas get ushered into our society is because they're cryptic and enshrouded in what sounds really pretty. Diversity, equity, inclusion, different body types, races, cultures, creeds. What this really means, let's translate this. We're going to help not reduce, but increase the amount of people who are female, we're going to increase the amount of people that are black and brown, and we're going to increase the amount of people who are short and fat. That's what that sentence means. In layman's terms, in actual real life speak, reality speak, that's what it means. And are any of those things plausible? Yeah, it's totally plausible to have more females in the military if that's where you want to be, and if you are strong, as strong as a man is. Yeah. Totally plausible to have people of different races. Yeah. Body types, sure. So long as you can meet the requirements that you are meant to meet. And that's all that we advocate for on our side of the aisle. You know, we get called racist bigots and all this fun, crazy stuff. All we're saying is take all that stuff off and then take people who qualify. Take the black... If a 5'4", fat black woman can come to a recruitment agency, perform the physical fitness tests that are required of her to join the military, and I mean the same ones as the men, not the same one as the women, the same one as the men, and she can perform and do that and wants to be in the military, take her. Trip over yourselves to put her in the military. But if they can't, don't trip over yourselves to put her in. That's simply it.
Yeah, people. None of these identity categories that they are focusing on of gender, race, sexuality, demographics, income of your families or family structure, none of them have any bearing on your ability to perform the duties of being a soldier. And right. If they did, then maybe they should factor into the recruitment process, but they really don't. And to focus on them at the expense of qualification is literally backwards.
Right.
And it makes us vulnerable. It's, you know, things that exist for a purpose. If you, in a vacuum, if you want to talk about, you know, we should celebrate diversity and all this stuff. But when it comes to flying a plane or, you know, like if for airlines that are hiring based on diversity, you hire a lesser qualified candidate because you're only looking at one's like 10% of the hiring pool or 13% of the hiring pool instead of 100%. People's lives are on the line, and ditto for the military. And
right.
these identity categories should not take precedence over qualification. It's that simple.
Yeah, it's that simple. You know, if I can't meet the male requirements and Taylor and I are in combat and Taylor gets shot, what am I to do? If I can't carry him and take care of him, what am I doing in the military? Now, there's other space for women who are not as physically fit to be in things like intelligence. And to be on the more technological side, there are so many other jobs that are involved in the military that'd be perfect for a woman who doesn't meet the physical requirements of what's going on. But to send them into combat, to start making a flying vest for pregnant women, like we saw the Air Force do, are you stupid? Like, are you though? Because that's not even something understandable. Making a pregnancy flight suit for women in the Air Force, are you kidding me? Like, you can give me a break on that one. I'm normally quite understanding of things as far as wokeness pertains to it, but military pregnancy flight suits, I will not be understanding of. Now, here's some of the things that they're trying to change when it comes to the Army itself. Holton Davis also recommends changing organizational cultural norms that can hamper the building of cognitive diverse teams by causing individuals in non-dominant or stigmatized groups to change their identities and behavior. Instead, the Army should promote authentic self-expression and to allow for the full employment of individual talents. For example, the Army, they suggest, should not insist that Black women in the ranks wear tight hairstyles such as a bun. And the Army needs to ensure that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer service members don't feel the need to hide in the context of a predominantly cisgender male heterosexual population. Ah, yes. So when the CCP descends on the American, on America, I'm going to be screaming at the Black lieutenant to put her hair in a tight bun. That's what I'm going to be concerned about. And I'm going to be so glad that we brought together everybody to have a discussion about diversity, equity, inclusion as it pertains to Black female hairstyles. I'm going to be so glad we spent a good hour on that conversation so that we didn't discriminate, so that the soldiers feel good while they're out doing their hair however they want to do it. And I want to go, I don't know the particular qualifications as far as hair in the military, but I imagine there are Black women with short hair who can't put their hair in a bun and they just don't. I imagine that that's the case. And guess what? There are men that show up with very long hair, and guess what? They buzz it, and they chop it off, and they say, here, you're going to have a short hair. And for women with long hair, they go, hey, you're going to have it in a slick ponytail. And that's the requirement, and that's what you're going to do. And if you can't handle that requirement, you can't handle being in the military. I just cannot believe the sort of sensitivity, walking on eggshells conversations we're having in our society right now, particularly for a job that requires you sometimes to sacrifice your life.
Yeah, the whole point of, or the whole culture around the military is, like, it's not about you. It's about the mission.
Right.
It's about winning. It's about defending the country. And you expressing your personality or all this stuff is not the priority. That's why they shave the men's heads or have, like,
why you wear your uniforms.
Yes. It's not to say that that doesn't mean that the country doesn't value your individuality as a human being or acknowledge that you are and a valuable human being and can express yourself however you want. You can, but when you're joining the military, you are doing that for a purpose and a role.
Right.
And part of that, it flows better, it works better, and it sends the message that sets the tone that, hey, we are one unit marching together to accomplish the mission. This isn't about how expressing your gender fluidity or having an exotic hairstyle or something for anyone, no matter across the board, because we de-emphasize those traits and all that stuff because it's not what it's about. It's just not the time or the place to worry about all that stuff. We have an enemy. Like, again, when an enemy, like you said, when China is descending on the United States
right.
in an invasion, we can send out all sorts of two-spirit, gender fluid people with kind of hairstyles that we want.
We don't have 5 transgender soldiers on the front line. This is not adding up with our diversity standards.
Right, and they've all been through 10 levels of DEI training and all that stuff, but they don't know how to shoot a gun and they can't carry one. It's like, okay, well, that's not, we're gonna melt away. And there, and these people in Russia, China, or around the country, or around the world, are laughing at us as they see us just navel gazing and digging ourselves deeper into this hole of this diversity ideology at the expense of our military readiness and strength.
Yep. It's the old, what's the old saying? You don't have to destroy your enemy, let your enemy destroy themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, baby. We're there. If I'm looking at myself, like this morning, I was reading this story and I was like, you know what? I'd be better in the military than some of these people. And that's saying something. You guys see these noodle arms? And I'd be better in the military than some of these oppression Olympics people who are joining for the sake of equity, diversity, and inclusion. You guys should be scared that I just said that. You guys should be scared that I just said that. I can do about 2 pull-ups and I'd be better. And I would drag Taylor out of a combat situation if needed.
I mean, if you are qualified, then by all means, go for it.
Yep. That's it, guys. And at this point, I guess I am qualified. I should be able to waltz in and join the military if these are the standards for protecting your country. Wild, wild. And yeah, I bet a lot of other countries are getting a good solid laugh at the old United States of America, and they probably have been for quite some time.
They're probably looking at each other in disbelief, like, we're like winning the war for a global, the struggle for global dominance and power,
yep,
literally just by sitting here,
yep,
and watching the United States just make itself weaker and weaker.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we are. We're going to do a whole segment, a whole separate video on the state of the military right now, how they are having trouble even finding recruits due to things like vaccine mandates and people just not meeting the health requirements all across the United States. So we're going to talk about that in depth so you guys get a view of just exactly where we are. Not to like blackpill you or anything, but it is a little concerning. Considering.
Real quick, Stevie asked, has Amal ever shot a gun?
I have, yes. I go to the range every now and then here in Los Angeles, and I've been a couple times in Florida. I always just shoot a Glock 9 standard every single time, because if I, that would be the firearm of choice for me, and I just want to get really good at one before I move on to others. Yeah, so sometimes, but not as often as some of your other fellow conservatives, I'm sure. They're like some gun hustlers who are always at the gun club.
We need to do a Amala Goes to the Shooting Range vlog. Would you guys like to see that?
Yeah, let me know if you guys would like to see it. Put it in the comments down below. And for today's stream, what do I want you to comment? Let me know your thoughts on Keke Palmer and her getting compared to Zendaya. Is that something, is that a worthy comparison? Is that something that you don't see as particularly offensive or an example of colorism? Or do you think sometimes people are just simple and they compare black actresses simply because they're black? Drop it in the comments down below. And that is our show for today. Thank you guys so much for watching. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we go live. That'll be at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and every single time we post a video for you, which we are doing more and more and more. If you're a new subscriber, thank you for subscribing. We got hella subscribers over the weekend, so thank you for joining us. And if you're new here, again, I'm Amal Ebanobi. That's Taylor. And we work here at PragerU. So thank you for watching. If you'd like to listen, go to Google Play, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review, because a lot of the lefties leave us 1-star reviews. They don't like what we have to say. They don't like the evidence that we have to give them. And again, comment your thoughts on the Keke Palmer situation. I will see you guys tomorrow.